Blog Talk Radio.
It's Rich Wilson. Welcome to Fantasy Baseball Live. We are here every Sunday evening talking the game of baseball, talking fantasy baseball, talking whatever we want to talk about. Of course, this is our midweek podcast on Wednesday. It's 10 p.m. We are live. In fact, I don't know if I've got the interactive chat room started up here, so let me do that. It has been an interesting day. We had a big trade, and we'll talk about. And we're also going to go through a lot of prospects. My May pop-up column that I wrote last week, which is, you know, for people in dynasty league groups, that's something that you really want to pay attention to, because I do a lot of research on that. Talk to a lot of people in the industry, and try to get some names of guys who are really coming up in the world from a prospect standpoint. And of course, we will answer a bunch of listener questions, and we'll finish off with that. It's going to be about a 30-minute show tonight, maybe slightly shorter. I've got some things I've got to do. I've got another interview tonight at 11 o'clock on Sirius XM. So if you're getting this in near real time, you can go out and listen to me on that. I'm talking with the NFBC guys, and I do that a lot midweek and others as well. I guess I should post when I'm going to be doing these media type of events. This weekend and next are going to be a little difficult for me. I am flying out to Asia. I leave on Saturday night. I don't know. We're either not going to have a show on Sunday, or I will record another short podcast either right before I leave or as soon as I get there. But hopefully it'll be arriving sometime on Sunday, Monday morning for your listening pleasure. I doubt Mr. McLeod will be there. I'll be back on Thursday. So hopefully he and I can do a podcast on Thursday to try to make up for it. Or we might just wait to do it together on Sunday. I know you all look forward to him, but it's going to have to wait a little bit longer. Makes the heart grow fonder. If you want to get a hold of me, the best way to do that is on the Twitter, at RichWilsonFSG, at RichWilsonFSG. And if you want, go out and rate and review us. We haven't had a lot of reviews here recently. Go out and do that on iTunes. Is the best place to do that. If that's where you're downloading the show from, we'd appreciate that. Anything you would like to say. So there was a trade that went out tonight. It was kind of an interesting trade, because it involved kind of a power guy from the Diamondbacks in the form of Mark Trumbo. And I guess Vidal Sassoon went with him as well. And I got to tell you, for those of you who just don't know, and by the way, I screwed up Mark Reynolds' name on Sunday. I apologize. I wrote down Matt Reynolds. I was thinking of the young shortstop for the Mets, and it came out as Mark, as Matt Reynolds, as opposed to Mark Reynolds. Thousand apologies. That was quite embarrassing. But Mark Trumbo goes along with Vidal Nuño to the Seattle Mariners, and the Mariners pretty much give away a couple of prospects. And who did they send? Gee, my screen just kind of flashed here. I know Gabby Guerrero and Reinheimer went as well, and then a couple middle relievers. For some reason, I've lost the trade. Oh, there it is. Who were the middle relievers that went along with that? But anyway, it's interesting, the Mark Trumbo, because if you recall, back when he was traded a couple of years ago, I mean, he went in that big trade that sent Adam Eaton to Chicago, and it was a three-way deal with the Angels, and the Angels got back Hector Santiago. And so it was a fairly substantial trade that involved a lot more value than what we saw here. And while I like Gabby Guerrero a lot, he is the nephew, not the son, but the nephew of Vlad Guerrero. And I've seen him a number of times play. Guy's got raw power. He's got a really, really good arm. He's got his uncle's arm as well. Doesn't wear the gloves when he bats. So it's a lot of his uncle in him, and swings as aggressive as his uncle did. Unfortunate thing is, he ain't as good as his uncle. He doesn't have that hand-eye coordination. It's pretty good, but it's not that elite hand-eye coordination that made Gabby Guerrero kind of a near Hall of Fame type of player and a very, very good player for a long time. Does Gabby make it to the major leagues? I think he does. Is he a 230, 20 home run player, a Mark Trumbo-ish player? He could be with a little less power. A better outfielder, a little less power, a guy who might bat 230 with a 260, 270 on base percentage because he swings at everything. So that's who they got back. Reinheimer's an interesting player. He's probably a utility guy, pretty good defender, got a little bit of speed. And they seem to like to collect shortstops there in Arizona. What I think it does free up is now there's a big gaping hole in right field. And I think what's going to happen as Jake Lamb is coming back and being recovering from his injuries, I think they're going to put Yasmani Tomas out in right field. Yasmani Tomas is not an athlete, as everybody has seen, but he's a better defender than Mark Trumbo. So I think you're going to see a plus defensive move, or not a plus defensive move, a better defensive move there. And I think that's going to help the I think that's going to help the Diamondbacks a lot. And I think they get a nice little player at third base coming back. Is Jake Lamb a first division starter? In other words, a top 15 starter in the league? The answer is no. I think he's probably a second division starter, but the Diamondbacks are a second division team. So I think he could get the starting gig for another year or so. I like Brandon Drury a lot, who's right behind him. So keep an eye on him as well. The Mariners, they seem like they're going all in, and it's not a very good team offensively. Robinson Cano has really run into a wall this year. I don't know if it's a slump. I don't know if the fact that he's 32 years old now. I don't know if the fact that it's Safeco Field and knocking the balls down, but That team really revolves around him. And while Nelson Cruz is having a very, very good year, they needed a little more thump in that lineup. The pitching looks okay. I mean, Taijuan Walker now for the second consecutive week in a row really, really pitched well. What I find interesting about him is just two home games that he pitched well. Last couple of games where he really stuck up the joint were away. So I know he pitches his next game away from Safeco. Maybe there's something going on there. So we need to kind of watch out for that. So an interesting trade, kind of a fantasy guy moves to Safeco Field. I think you have to bring him down a notch. I mean, he goes from a hitter's ballpark to a pitcher's ballpark. It didn't stop Nelson Cruz. It might not stop Trumbo too much because he's got plus raw power, but you know, I think you have to still bring him down a notch as well. But I do think it improves the Diamondbacks a little longer term. I think Gabby Guerrero and the freeing up of Yasmani Tomas play the outfield and Jake Lamb playing the infield, I think that's a better configuration of that team. And I think you get a sense of how valuable a guy like Mark Trumbo is, somebody who doesn't get on base a lot. He's going to hit you 30, potential for 30 home runs, no defensive outfielder at all. Those guys take a big hit when you start to trade those in the major leagues. Even though you love that power from a fantasy standpoint, major leagues teams are a little bit smarter than that because they have to play defense and they've got to worry about on-base percentage in the context of a team, as opposed to what does that look like in my rotisserie league or head-to-head league, etc. Also, another interesting thing happened today, and that is Diaz was signed by the Red Sox, and I got a ton of tweets out there. What does this mean? Is Betts going to be traded? You know, he's having, you know, just an okay year. Can they bring in Cole Hamels? E-Rod was great again. If they bring in Cole Hamels, this can put them in play. It might. I mean, if they bring in Cole Hamels, this could put the Boston Red Sox in play again. So, I mean, that's an interesting thought. I don't think Diaz is anything more than an extra outfielder at this point. I know he's owed $5 million. It'll be interesting to see how much money the Red Sox pay him versus what the Orioles are required to pay him, because there was no players that went back. So, you know, it could be, so we're a third of the way done the season. So it's what, let's call it $3 million, $3.2 million or something like that left on the contract. You could see the Red Sox pay half of that and be done with it. You know, and that would probably be a fair trade. I just don't see him taking playing time away from Ruzny Castillo. I do not see the Red Sox trading away Mookie Betts. I mean, it could happen. And, you know, maybe Ruben Amaro will be the smart one because if he gets Mookie Betts, I'm telling you, Mookie Betts is going to be a really, really good player. I don't want to say superstar, but I do want to say he's got all-star upside, fantasy all-star upside for sure, with a little bit of power, a lot of speed, a guy that's going to get on base more than he's been getting on base. And he's just making an adjustment. This guy is a really, really good player. My feeling is I still believe once Manny Margot gets recovered, I think he leads that. I think he becomes a primary piece as they try to bring in Cole Hamels. It's probably one of the more fascinating things that we're going to see in the second half as the trade deadline goes, is where does Cole Hamels go? Because if he doesn't go by the trade deadline, man, his trade value really starts to go down, because then it's, what is it now, 3 years left on that contract as opposed to 4 years. And, you know, if he goes to one of the teams that it's on his no trade clause, then they might have to pay him an extra year. So it does get a little messy. Is his the time is ticking on it. He's not getting any younger, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I do think that whole thing is very, very interesting in terms of what they're going to do with that. There's a great Tim McLeod is out in the interactive chat room. That's pretty interesting. So, and Robert Mershak is also in the interactive chat room. Apparently I butchered his name on last Sunday, which Robert, I 1000% apologize to you. Apparently his family had a great laugh after that. So Robert's a really good player, by the way. Like to get him into some more leagues, as he's a really, really good player. Joey Gallo got called up. Talk about a big surprise. I got it wrong. I didn't think he'd come up. Tim McLeod baited me last Sunday, and I said, he's not coming up. No way. It makes no sense. Of course, he comes up and it's 3-for-4, hits a bomb, almost hits in the cycle. I guess he struck out, so maybe you could say he hit for the cycle. The guy's just got tremendous raw power. We saw already with a home run. But I got to tell you, when I'm watching, you know, parts of the game, watching him at bat, I mean, you see the talent there. He is definitely going to be a very, very good major leaguer. But it's hard not to think back to Javier Baez's first two games. Remembering it, 3 home runs in the first 2 games, and then stunk up the joint. Well, Gallo didn't have a chance because he's going against Chris Sale, and I think he was 0-for-1 with a strikeout, and maybe I don't know what else. Maybe it was just 0-for-1 when I looked at the box score. You know, I think there is a chance for him to get a really hot start, but John Daniel says he's going back to the minor leagues. If Adrian Beltre comes back, really, where's he going to play? He has played, I think, 4 or 5 times in the outfield, so it is not out of the question that he can move to the outfield, but I think he's really going to have to hit to stay up. And I think there's a chance, I'm telling you, there's some holes in that swing that he's going to be exposed. But he's a fun player. He's a guy that in a dynasty league, he should be owned everywhere. Just bottom line, he should be owned everywhere. The other thing I want to talk about before we get to our May pop-up article is what's happening out in Chicago. Jorge Soler hits the DL with an ankle injury. What we saw yesterday was Chris Bryant playing left field, and all of a sudden that leads to, does Javier Baez gets called up? He hit another home run yesterday. He's really raking. Should he come up, and where should he play if he comes up, et cetera, et cetera? And, you know, I don't think it's out of the question that Javier Baez, they give him another chance. Again, this is a guy who's got incredible amounts of talent. I don't think the contact rate is solved. I think he's always going to struggle with that. I think he's always going to be an aggressive hitter. But I think he's going to hit you 30 bombs, too. So, you know, I think that's just the player he is. And as Timmy and I talked last Sunday, that's the calculus with a lot of these young players. It's tons of swing and miss, tons of power. And that seems to be what the game is going into. As you recall, that's Billy Beane saw that in the late 90s, and that's how Moneyball all started. It'd be interesting to see if that all happens again, where on-base percentage becomes the scarce resource again, and it seems like we're going that way. But back to the Cubs. So Rizzo is locked in at first. I don't think unless he gets injured, that's not moving. Catching, I think, is locked in. Right field, assuming Jorge Soler comes back, is taken. Center field, definitely taken by Dexter Fowler for this year. Who knows about next year? I think shortstop, unless you think they're going to trade Starlin Castro, I do not. It's taken. So that really leaves third base, second base, and left field as possibilities. We've got Chris Bryant. He's going to play one of them. You've got Javier Baez if he comes up. The odd man out to me is Chris Coughlin. Let's face it, Chris Coughlin is just, you know, he's an average player, probably a fringe average player at best. So I think you could very easily see, and this Jorge Soler being out, Javier Baez getting a call, moving into third base, Addison Russell continuing to play second base, and seeing Chris Bryant out in the outfield. And if that works, then potentially when Jorge Soler comes back, that's when you see the big change. And Coughlin either becomes an extra outfielder. So it's all going to be up to Javier Baez. Is he going to be able to stick? I just don't know. I mean, he's only a very, very short sample size since he's come back and started playing just, what, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago? I mean, he's looked great, but he looked great before he got called up last year. So I don't think anybody, I don't think we can sit there and say we know for sure. All I know is tremendous bat speed, tremendous raw power, and a chance, I think, to be a very, very good player. And it's going to happen. He's still extremely young. So, you know, fab for this weekend, put down a couple of bucks on Javier Baez. I think that's a wise move. My May pop-up article that I wrote, I think it's an important article, as I mentioned before, not trumpeting my own horn, but this is an article that I spend a lot of time researching. I talk to a lot of people, and it's pretty hard to talk to guys, you know, when they're working in seasons. I have a lot more success in the off season talking to scouts and front office guys, but I do get a chance to kind of talk to a lot of people in the industry. And so this list is one that's a lot of my thoughts and also a lot of industry guys validating and giving me feedback on. And there's a couple guys, I'm not going to just simply read the article, but a couple guys I want to really point out to. And I saw this, we saw this coming. And Albies is the first guy, shortstop from the Atlanta Braves. I'm hearing nothing but really, really positive stuff about this kid. He's very, very young. He just turned 18 in January, and he's been playing his heart out there in low A. This guy could be a plus defender at shortstop. You know he's not going to stay there because they have Anderton Simmons, and Simmons is signed for quite a while. Second base seems to be already solved as well. And it's funny because now Jose Peraza has now moved to the outfield. Where does Albies play eventually? I don't know, but this guy could be really, really good. And he's got bat speed, and I think a chance to hit some bombs down the road, maybe 5 to 10 home runs, definitely stolen bases there. But the thing that's really going to get him to the major leagues is not only his glove, but his ability to make contact. The other two guys I want to talk about, and we should have seen this coming, is Alex Reyes. I got a tweet at me this evening putting Alex, or maybe something out on my site, afraid to trade Alex Reyes to get Nelson Cruz. I'm like, hey, man, if you can get Nelson Cruz, that's what you have prospects for in a dynasty league, because, I mean, they're there not only to mature, matriculate up to the major league level, they're also there for trade bait. And that's how you play the dynasty league game. Alex Reyes, I love the stuff. This guy has three quality pitches with a fastball, double plus fastball, and a really, really good off-speed pitch as well. So this guy's got incredible athleticism. The problem is he can't find the plate. He's have a high walk rate. I think when I wrote this, it was up at five walks per nine. Hasn't gotten a whole lot better. He's still in high A. There's a lot of time for him to improve. But if it all comes together, and I got to tell you, you cannot discount anybody coming through that Cardinals organization about pitchers putting it together. This could be a very, very special pitcher, or definitely a number two, maybe more upside. So when the gentleman put the email out to me, I encouraged him to make the trade, but 2-3 years down the road, Alex Reyes could be, you know, kind of your Carlos Martinez, Shelby Miller esque type of player, and you see what those guys are starting to do now. I mean, this is a very, very elite talent. Orlando Arcia, we've talked about a lot. I mentioned before about Jean Zecora, probably they're moving to second base eventually. Arcia is a much better defensive player, or eventually the Milwaukee Brewers cleaning house and Jean Secor would bring back a King's ransom. Everybody, I got, I think, brutalized in the Prospect 361 Dynasty League group Facebook page, overestimating when I said, hey, the Mets would have to give up a Steven Matz and a Rafael Montero. And some guy said, that's never going to happen. That's too much. And it's probably not enough. Young shortstops that are under team control, who've proven in the major leagues that their major league players are extremely valuable. It's just the bottom line. I mean, Jean Secor is an average, maybe slightly above average defender, but the guy can play and he's got speed. He does get on base. And so it's a very, very valuable guy. Orlando Arcia is a better hitter, not nearly as much speed, but a better defender. And I think you're going to see him eventually up in the major leagues, probably 2016. But if Jean Segura gets moved, you could see him in the second half. I think he's going to be a slightly better fantasy player than Francisco Lindor, but kind of in that same mode. And a lot of people go, oh, Francisco Lindor. Guys who can bat, have a chance to bat 300, get on base a lot, a chance to score a lot of runs with a little bit of pop and some speed, that's not a bad player. I mean, you win championships with that. You don't necessarily have to have Troy Tulowitzki at shortstop to win a fantasy league, or Jose Reyes in his prime to win a fantasy league. A guy that's going to get you seven home runs, 23 stolen bases, and bat 300 and score 80 to 90 runs. That'll do just fine for me at shortstop. So that's the kind of upside I see with Orlando Arcia. Jose De Leon is a player that people should know about now. I had a chance to see him. I wrote kind of a scouting report on that, on this guy. This is a kid that is just tore up high A and eventually got moved to double A. The first outing at double A was not very good. In fact, the other guy wrote about Daniel Mengen also got moved up to from low A to high A and has really, really struggled in high A. So he was my final May pop-up guy. I like him a lot as well. But Jose De Leon has a chance to be really, really good. And he really came out of nowhere. Not a lot of people were talking about him last year. When I had a chance to see him, somebody told me to go and see him. And I was totally blown away. I've seen Julio Urias, and Urias is a better pitcher, but not that much better. This guy has a chance to be very, very good. Three quality pitches and the ability to locate his ball. I mean, it was a very, very good command, and I was impressed. I really was. And he's got to leap over Julio Urias or wait for him to move on as well. I got to tell you, thanks to what's happened in Los Angeles Dodgers organization, Greinke's probably not going to be there next year. He's going to opt out of his contract. So you could see Urias and De Leon get their chance next year because they're always looking for pitchers after Clayton Kershaw. And, you know, I think if we were talking about 2016, there's a chance you see both of those guys up now as opposed to putting out Bolsinger. Yeah, he's had a really good start here. These guys have way more talent than him. Blake Snell, there's been a lot of discussion about this kid. He went 46 straight innings without without giving up a run. He finally gave up a run, and I think it made national news. Left-handed pitcher, power left-handed pitcher, and we've seen this with E-Rod. Guys said left-handers that can throw 93 to 95 miles an hour. That's coming at you because lefties usually don't throw as hard as right-handed pitchers in general. I don't know why. I mean, I guess we could talk about maybe some mechanics or some historical reason as to why that is. But, so when you can throw mid-90s velocity as a lefty, you take notice. And the fact that the secondary pitches have really taken a step up. He's a smart kid that really thinks through what he wants, his approach out there, what he wants to do. He's really good. Unfortunately, he plays for the Tampa Bay Rays, and no telling when he will be up, but is in double A already. Could he come up second half of this year? possibly. I think it's probably more this time next year to get him out of the Super 2 for 2017. My guess is they'll want to see him play half a year or nearly a full season in AAA, and we'll be on the Matt Moore watch that we were on a couple of years ago, unless he signs some, you know, 7-year, $40 million contract, and they'll, you know, probably something a lot less, a $35 million contract, and, you know, they'll get him for cheap Evan Longoria type of money and bring him up. Couple of guys that I do want to talk about also in the Tampa Bay organization, Brent Honeywell, a lot of positive things, feedback that I've gotten on him. I've not seen him pitch at all. You know, the only thing that does worry me a little bit is that he is a bit of a fly ball pitcher. But the stuff is very good. I think he is going to move as quickly as he can through a Tampa Rays organization where people don't move quickly through. So I think there's somebody there that we should know about. Jack Bowers is another kid, again, with the Tampa Bay Rays. There's a lot of Tampa Bay Ray guys in here. He can really hit, and I wrote about him last year as a kid that can really hit. Put him down as a James Loney type of player, though he's shown a little bit of pop this year. But, man, what a great hit tool. Can really take a pitch, makes good contact. There could be something there with Jake Bowers. And then finally, I wrote about guys that, like, they've come back, and Trevor Story and Mason Williams. And Mason Williams has recently got promoted to AAA. I've seen him play a ton in AA, and I own him in a one dynasty league and eventually dropped them because I'm telling guys, you would go to a game with Mason Williams and it would be like, he don't want to be out there. He just seemed to be bored. But man, he has come back with a vengeance this year. I've seen him play. He's still not showing any pop at all. I mean, no pop at all. When I wrote this, I don't know what his slugging percentage was, but it was something like 350. So I think I'd seen him with four extra base hits and like 150 at bats or something like that. But he's also playing well now in AAA. He's getting on base. He's a plus defender. He's got some speed. You could see him definitely up because the Yankees, of course, are going to get hurt. You could see him up. Slade Heathcott got a chance to come up. He eventually got hurt, which always happens with Slade Heathcott. So it could be an opportunity for Mason Williams to see some playing time here in the second half. And for fantasy standpoint, yeah, for some speed, he might be able to help you. Again, he's making really good contact. He's always made very good contact. And he's a big guy. He's a strong kid. The swing is just so, you know, army. You know, he just doesn't get any of his lower half involved. So there's really no power in there, and there should be. He really needs to alter that swing a little bit to try to get a little pop in there. Let me grab a couple of questions from our listeners that I asked the Facebook page. I got like 50 questions. I was going to try to get through 10 of them, but I've talked too much and I've only got about another 5 minutes here. So let me go through these as quickly as I can. Bill Robertson and Russ Heinen, if I get your names wrong, I apologize. Are we staying put on Dahl? I know this is still recent, but I'd like your thoughts on Dahl's injury if it impacts his future, if any. Guys, I was a little surprised after he lacerated his spleen. It sounded like he was going to be out recovering for the rest of the baseball season. And here he was, I read a splenectomy, which means he got his spleen taken out. And remember from my high school anatomy, I think you need the spleen, right? Isn't that like red blood cells, takes out the bad red blood cells, puts in the good ones or something like that? So I don't know if he's got to be on medicine the rest of his life. I don't know what all that means. I sure hope the heck it was that was the course of action recommended by the doctors and not by, hey, I want to get back and playing baseball. I mean, from a baseball standpoint, it's encouraging to see he might come back sometime this year. We could see him in the Arizona Fall League. But man, if he he wanted to cut a couple more months of playing time this year, boy, I hope that wasn't the reason, but what do I know? I'm totally in on David Dahl. Total big talent. A guy can really hit. There's going to be some speed. A plus defender. You're going to love the fact that he plays in Coors Field. I don't think this injury is career threatening at all. You should continue to be all in on David Dahl. As I'm putting together my top 50, he's about 25 to 30. That's where he's sitting in there. So as you can tell, I'm pretty big on him. Jeff Smith. With the success of Erod coming up from the minors, which pitching prospect do you see succeeding next? John Gray, Henry Owens, Vincent Velasquez, Aaron Nola. Well, Velasquez started the year a little late. He's always injured. That's a problem. Plays for the Houston Astros, if you don't know. Pitched very, very well since he's been up. 5 games, 26 and a third innings, 37 strikeouts, 9 walks. Let me repeat that. 26 innings pitch, 37 strikeouts, 9 walks. This is being done in Double A. I've seen Vincent Velasquez several times. Saw him at the Arizona Fall League. I saw him pitch out in High A out in Lancaster twice. This guy really looks good on the mound, really athletic build, very smooth delivery, really good stuff, a really good slider. So, hey, if they could bring up Lance McCullers, and Lance McCullers having the kind of season he is, I think Vincent Velasquez is the next guy to come up. I mean, do we really think Brett Oberholtzen's a guy that's going to hold down a spot? I mean, Scott Feldman probably will. I think he is injured at the moment, but after Keuchel and Colin McHugh, let's say Lance McCullers now is looking like he may be part of that rotation. I still think they need another guy in there. And I know there's been talk about Cole Hamels. Maybe they bring him in. I just can't see it. But Vincent Velasquez could be an answer there. Like him a lot. Aaron Nola, you could see him up in the second half with your Philadelphia Phillies. Yeah, he's going to be good. He's going to be very good. He's not a number one, probably not a number two, but probably a strong number three pitcher out there. They're going to need somebody to throw innings, particularly if they trade Cole Hamels. Hyatt, Lazear. I have no idea how you pronounce that. With the continued emergence of Orlando Arcia and the strong showing of Coulter, so the Brewers finally have some impact guys in their system. Yeah, they do. As I indicated, Arcia has really broken out. Again, I put him below the top three, but closer, you know, if I put the top three as Correa, Seager, Linder as a top three shortstop, I see Arcia run after that, kind of slotting in right behind Lindor. There's not, again, as I indicated before, not a whole lot of difference between the two. 39 strikeouts, 21 walks, and 196 at bats. Got 9 home runs. That's a ton of home runs sitting in the Florida State League last year. So it's an impressive showing. They also have Cody Medeiros, who was their first round draft pick. I think he's a reliever in the end. You know, he's done better than I thought he would this year. I still think he's a reliever. Jacob Gatewood and Monty Harrison have really, really struggled. So they're striking out a ton, really at an alarming rate. So I think it was 35% of the time they were both striking out and hardly walking at all. So, but they're still babies. They're 18 years old. So give them time. Yeah, that system's a little bit better. My number one person in the organization was Tyrone Taylor. You know, he's just not put it together. He's really struggled in Double A. OPS is 629. I did see him once. I said it on a series and outside of Orlando, Brevard County. And yeah, he looked good. But clearly he's got the Double A and he's struggling a little bit. Only 21 years old, pretty young for the league. So you got to stay patient. A good friend, Robert Miersak, is in the chat room. So I'll do two of his questions, which I thought were really good. And I'll end with that. First one is, how important is a prospect's mental makeup? How is that measured? That's a good question. I can't tell you how it's measured. It's through observations. It's through watching a kid play over and over again. As media people like myself, we don't see it. We just don't. I mean, you can see sometimes from game to game, you could see somebody showing a lot of want and desire out there. But it's, you know, when you come in for a series and see them and you're looking more at skills, it's hard to check on the makeup. Sometimes I'll talk to a scout who's sat in and seen a player play 30 times and go, wow, this kid has got great makeup, because he's seeing them all the time. He's seeing that makeup on the field of wanting to go out there and do better and the extra effort and out there, extra batting practice, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes you get a chance to talk to the coaching staff and they'll say the same thing. But great mental makeup has nothing to do with how good of a citizen you are. I remember a conversation, and Tim McLeod will remember this. We were at the Arizona Fall League and somebody was given a presentation, I forgot who it was, and told this story of Garrett Cole and kind of some inappropriate comments he made to this particular scout. And we all laughed about it. You know, it was involving, you know, dating and things like that. And it was funny, but it was definitely inappropriate. And he kind of looked at like, why are you telling me this kind of stuff? I mean, gross type of thing. Well, I mean, Garrett Cole is a madman when it comes to data preparation and game preparation. He's out there looking at film. He's crazy about that stuff. And we're seeing the end results of what he's doing, which is very, very, very good. So mental makeup, game makeup is there. Maybe he's a bit of a, you know, questionable things off the field, but who cares? You care about what he does on the field. And that's when that's what we talk about, mental makeup. And then it says, finally, Robert's last question, it seems like more young players are coming up and doing well immediately this year. Why do you think this is, and what percentage of top prospects do you think make it to an average MLB player? Well, first of all, Robert, I'm not sure that's completely true. I mean, it sounds like the Chris Bryants of the world. I mean, they're doing great, but Chris Bryant down to .266 batting average now. So again, in our BABIP, B-A-B-I-P, we talked about Chris Bryant. I mean, that expected batting average sitting around 200. So, I mean, we're going to see this guy be at 230 in no time. So yeah, he's hit a lot of home runs. He's walking a lot. He's playing great. But there are few Chris Bryants out there in the world. Think of Daniel Norris. Think of Dalton Pompey. I mean, this guy's wet the bed, or Dalton Pompey in particular. Daniel Norris, not so much. Archie Bradley, how well did he do? How well is he doing? He's had a couple of good starts, but for the most part, he's been very, very average. Joey Gallo came up and had a great start to the season. How good is he really going to be? How good has Addison Russell really been? He's batting, what, 260? He's having a nice season, but, I mean, is he really tearing the ball off the cover? Steven Souza, as much as I love Steven Souza, you love the 11 home runs on 7 stolen bases, the crazy strikeout rate, the 220 average. I mean, how well is he doing? Jock Peterson's been all world, so there's one. But, I mean, there's some players doing very well, but, yeah, there's not a lot of players out there, I think, that are just completely tearing the cover off the ball. I think the problem or the situation is it's really, really hard to make it to the major leagues. This is a very difficult game. And the second biggest jump from that the minor league player goes is high A to double A. It's generally what all the scouts will tell you, but it's nowhere near what it's like to go from whatever you're going to the major leagues. That's the biggest step of them all, because guys who are playing in the major leagues, many of those pitchers have been doing it for years, and many of those hitters have been doing it for years. And whatever you come in as, you're going to be really, really challenged. It becomes more of a thinking man's game. What I think I've discovered, and I think what we're seeing this year, is the media guys like myself and Tim and others who, you know, let's face it, we're on the periphery of all this. I mean, I have an advantage because I get a chance to see a lot of minor league games, much more than most other people in the media. In fact, I think from a prospect standpoint, maybe some of the Baseball Perspectives guys see a few more games than me, but I probably see more than anybody just because I'm out there all the time. I take a lot of pride in doing that. Eventually, when I retire, then we're going to be talking 100 games a year, easy for me, probably more. What I think we're doing better at is not missing on the really top players, the Petersons, the Bryants, the Addison Russells of the world. So our top 10s look pretty good. 5-10 years ago, those top 10s, you would look at it and you'd get one or two of them right. I think we're not missing as much anymore on those guys. Where we are missing is everywhere else. It's on the Devin Travises of the world. The guys who maybe aren't as toolsy as the Jock Petersons and Chris Bryants of the world, who you just know, I mean, just by tremendous tools, they're going to be a success. But it's those Devin Travis guys who can make good contact or just a really good baseball player. They're not as valuable. And I think media guys like myself and others, we miss on those guys because we fall in love with the 70 to 80 grade power and the guy that can throw 100 miles an hour. And who's the best pitcher in baseball? Dallas Keuchel. Why is Dallas Keuchel a really good pitcher? I'll tell you why. He can command every one of his pitches. First, he can control it so he can throw them for strikes. The guy can put the ball wherever he wants. He throws 90 miles an hour. That's his fastball, is 90 miles an hour. But he's got, and I'm going to say it, people are going to laugh, he's got Greg Maddux command. He can put the ball wherever he wants. He's the best pitcher in baseball because of it. Dallas Keuchel gets no love in the prospect world, or Dallas Keuchel-like players, because we don't value those types of skill set as much as somebody with a great arsenal. Problem is, you really, and most times you need those great arsenals because so few guys as a pitcher have that 80 grade command or the 70 grade command that Dallas Keuchel has. That's why you lean towards, well, if I've got, tremendous raw stuff. I've got a I throw 97 miles an hour, and I've got a curveball that falls off the table, and or a changeup that's so deceptive it just breaks knees. I got a much better chance because my command is just going to be okay. Still can be successful. That's why you grade those players higher. But many times it's the ball players. It's the guys that really know how to pitch. It's the guys who can really make good contact and have a good approach who are the ones that make it. And we miss on those guys a lot. So to me, I read an article last year that was called Kids That Can Really Hit. In fact, I mentioned Jake Bowers in that same article. Look at that. If nothing else, when you go to Baseball America or you go to MILB and you're looking for players, look at for batters, look at and pitchers, look for strikeout to walk ratios. And look at a guy sorted by like batters by walks per nine, and look for those guys that are walking a lot. Then look at those guys who are striking out fewer. Try to find those that are almost 1-to-1. That's how Mookie Betts really came to the forefront. He had as many walks as he did strikeouts, and that's something that can tell you a guy's hit tool. It's the hardest thing to learn, and many times those guys are really undervalued. That's it for today. Again, I'll figure out what the heck we're doing this weekend. I'm hoping it's going to be two very short shows, 30-minute shows, with me probably recording from India. So it's going to be a lot of crazy fun. I don't know if there will be echoes or delays or things like that. But we appreciate your support and everything that you guys do. Good luck with your teams. And Mr. McLeod is still out there typing away in the interactive chat room. Be well, everybody.